And now it's time for Stages.
Stages.
All the world's a stage.
It's where we talk about
all things
theatrical.
It's about theatre.
Theatre makers.
If it's performing on a stage, we've got it for you here on Stages.
It's about half an hour long.
Okay, let's get on with the show.
Hello and welcome to Stages. I'm Regina Botras and we are talking theatre. And my guest this evening is Noelle Janicheska. She is a Sydney-based playwright, poet, essayist and author. She's had over 30 produced plays, performance texts, monologues, radio plays from fiction and non-fiction. Her works have been shortlisted and won awards for many decades now. Augie Awards, the Queensland Premier's Literary Award, Playbook's Asia Link Playwriting Competition, Griffin Award, so many accolades to her name. She has had work produced for ABC Radio National, National Museum of Australia and British Museum, and she's working with Good With Maps with Siren Theatre Company, and it's a return season. It's done multiple seasons and it's back at the Riverside Theatre on the 30th of April, 30th of April and 1st of May, May Day, when the world map was full of gaps. The Amazon topped the lists of places unknown to West explorers. And fast forward to 2021. Well, we'll be talking with her about Good With Maps as well as her life as a playwright, how to survive. And I am very much looking forward to talking with Noelle shortly, so stick around. In the meantime, it's time to subscribe online at 2SER.com. We wish you were here. If you aren't already, you go into the draw to get an Audio Technica turntable with vinyl packs. I mean, wow. So if you aren't already and you are a regular listener here at Stages, please get online at 2SER.com and subscribe. And this is Em Hoffman. He's playing this evening at The Vanguard, launching his album Lavender Sleeping.
Sydney Writers Festival's brightest stars come together at Sydney Town Hall on Friday, April 30, for a centrepiece event celebrating the festival theme, Within Reach. Featuring Tony Birch, Trent Dalton, Geraldine Brooks, Keredwin Dovey, Adam Goods, Fiona McGregor, Michael O'Loughlin, Christos Cholkas, Maria Tomarkin, and Ellen Van Nierven. Sydney Writers Festival, April 26 to May 2. Program out now at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers Festival sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Well, you're listening to Stages, and as I said, my guest this evening is Noelle Janicheska. She is an author of over 30 produced plays, performance, text, monologues, radio scripts, fiction and non-fiction. She's an author, essayist, poet, and won numerous and nominated for numerous prizes all around the country and internationally. She's here to talk to us about her life in the theatre as a playwright and how she came to be there in the first place. Welcome to Stages, Noelle.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming on. So before we start, where did you begin life?
I was born in London.
Did you? Was it a creative family? Like, what was life like as a child?
No, not really. A family that valued education and literature, books, but not an especially creative family. No.
So, but it was all around you, it sounds like.
To some degree.
Did you actually, so how did you come to be a playwright? Were you an author first? Did you study? Was it like a natural progression?
Yeah. No, I didn't. I mean, I did some, drama at school like lots of people did. I studied human sciences for my bachelor's degree and then sociology and social anthropology for master's. I got into theatre and performing, I suppose, through politics and through sort of the punk movement, really.
So was it a directive for you to, like, write political kind of commentary or commenting on the times? Or
all sorts of things. I was in sort of community groups, alternative theatre. It was this sort of height of alternative cabaret was getting going, moving away from the kind of the old-fashioned, mother-in-law jokes and of comedy. So it was in that sort of vein. And people, it was an ethos where people did everything. You painted the theatre at 4 a.m, you sold seats, you performed in it, you directed or wrote it, you played an instrument. So through all of that, and gradually through a sort of slow process, I think, of shedding other roles, and after I'd been in Australia a little while, I've discovered that really the part of theatre making that I liked most was writing.
So when did you come to Australia?
Long time ago, about 30 years ago.
So was this the punk movement and the kind of political, that world that you sort of started in, was that in London or was that here?
Yeah.
That was there. So what was that kind of vibe of the time like? It must have been exciting.
Yeah, it was so exciting. And also it was kind of like women were coming to their own. Like, a lot of, one of the things that was very exciting about sort of punk bands was there were a lot more women playing instruments as well as fronting them and singing them. They weren't just the backing vocalists anymore. So that was a good time. It all seems a long time ago now. But, yeah, it was an exciting time, that's for sure.
Did you play music yourself as well?
Yes, badly.
Well, that's how you got to do it, right?
But it didn't really matter with punk, right? You made a lot of noise and had the right attitude. That was more important than being a terribly proficient musician. I mean, I was okay, I can read music, but no, I was certainly nothing to write home about on the music front.
Can you remember, like, something that you might have written then during that time that was sort of one of those painting at 4 a.m, getting up, doing?
It wasn't really serious, but I remember there were bits of sketches and things that we did, yeah. But no, I don't. I remember wearing a costume that had a battleship on my head at one point and writing about the crisis of singing a song, actually, with about the crisis of capitalism. So there were lots of things like that in there. But I think, there was a lot happening sort of politically, creatively. It was exciting. It also seemed a way to get into some of those things that wouldn't have become apparent before. I think that was one of the really good things that punk did. It sort of opened up avenues for people who were not part of the sort of mainstream arts or culture industries. Certainly for what it did for a lot of women.
So do you now, the human science and the social anthropology, does that come into your work as a playwright as well? And how?
Yeah, it always it's always sort of, it's there. Sometimes I draw on it more than other times. And of course, you know, since then I've done a lot of other things. So yes, it's there. And I think it's actually good to not to study writing or something as an undergraduate. It gives me a sort of background in something different, which is, that's always useful. Knowledge is always useful, kind of understanding about a discipline area is always useful.
Let's talk about Good With Maps. Tell me a little bit about this work. It's quite a personal work, is that right?
It is. It sort of combines a trip I made to the Amazon, and that was such an important site for explorers, and thinking about all the people who went there looking for El Dorado or whatever it was they were looking there for, with juxtaposed with at that time I was writing it that my father had been diagnosed with Parkinson's and was in sort of latter stages of his life. So he was approaching, it's really our last great unknown, which is death. So yes, it is. Again, I sort of wrote that quite a few years ago now, but it is a personal thing. And it was initially something, you know, its first couple of outings, I read it myself. And then it became a production through Kate, who I'd worked with before, and Jane, and it became something much better than just me reading it.
So is there sort of a relationship between that exploration of the place and your father's experience? Is that?
Well, it's about journeys, I suppose, and about notions of going into the unknown, that I'd had a long, ever since I was a child, wanting to go to the Amazon. It took me a long time to get there, but I did.
Yeah, what an experience.
And of course, that's kind of like, you're very much aware that you're a tourist, no matter how much you're sort of there as a sort of writer doing research and things, you're still a tourist in that area. But inevitably, it was my fantasy when I was at primary school, I wanted to be an explorer. I thought that seemed like a wonderful career to have.
Indeed. So
I was kind of playing that out a bit and thinking about people, and explorers who went there. So that was my sort of journey. But it was both a physical journey and a sort of artistic, intellectual journey. At the same time as my father was making his own journey to the unknown, to what was really unknown. I mean, now most of the Amazon is known, at least to some people, even if it's only to sort of intrepid ethnographers and the indigenous people that live there. But it is known in a way that death isn't. Mm. And if that sort of makes it sound a bit of a downer, it's not. It's also, the piece is actually quite sort of funny and humorous about that as well. It's not just a sort of melancholy piece.
Mm. So what was it like going to the Amazon and fulfilling this thing, this dream that you'd had since a child?
Look, I really like traveling a lot. So at the moment, I'm feeling very kind of upset of taking to reading Lonely Planet guides to places I want to go to. That's how desperate I am to leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Look, it was very hot, very humid. I mean, I think it was the skies that really impressed me. You know, these amazing dramatic skies that just changed so quickly throughout the day, because almost every afternoon the heavens would open and intense rain would fall sort of sometime during the afternoon. It was really an extraordinary place to go. I mean, sadly, Brazil's got a horrible right-wing president now. When I was there quite a few years ago, so he wasn't there. It was a much more left-leaning kind of government. It's a stunningly beautiful place, Brazil. Then the Amazon was, it was exciting and confronting too in unexpected ways.
Like what way?
It was tamer in some regards and wilder in others. There was a whole story about, the rubber. I'd done quite a lot of research before I went there, so I knew I was, looking for certain things. Some things were just too difficult to organise. Like I really wanted to go to a place called Fordlandia in the Amazon, which is a little slice of America that Henry Ford built in the middle of the Amazon in order to try and break the cartels that control rubber production. It's now sort of a ruin, but with clearly bits of the whole American sort of model town there. But that just actually proved really difficult in the time I had available. I didn't have unlimited time or funds, so that was a bit disappointing. But other things I saw were extraordinary. Actually, sort of swimming in the Amazon was pretty exciting. Mm. I think there weren't any piranhas around.
You're listening to Stages, and my guest this evening is Noelle Janicheska. And I'm just going to take this quick break and an opportunity to ask my regular listeners to subscribe to 2SER. If you did this at our Radiothon last year, well, your job is done. But everyone else, if you love 2SER, if you love Stages, jump online and subscribe at 2SER.com. You'll help keep us and me on air, and do it in April, and you automatically go into the draw for one of two Audio Technica turntables plus some vinyl to go along with it. So get online at 2SER.com. Now back to my interview with Noelle Janicheska. Do you use travel as a kind of informing your writing? Is that part of your practice?
Yeah, it can be. Not inevitably or always, but yes, it can be. I like going to different places. I like hearing different languages, getting a sense of how life is lived in another place. At the same time, being very aware that being able to travel overseas is a privilege that I have. But I'm interested in journeys, both real and metaphorical and fictional and mythical, on all levels. And journeys, whether they're to your local supermarket or to the other side of the planet. They don't have to necessarily be big adventures like the Amazon. Journeys could be to, you know, the other side of Sydney. It's probably about all we can do at the moment. Well, we can go to New Zealand now at last. But I'm also interested in kind of journeys of the mind and imagination, imaginary landscapes as well. You know, how we imagine a place and then the reality of it sometimes when we go there. You know, and I'm also really interested in places that are considered crap places,
like rundown Henry Ford rubber factories.
Yeah,
or, you know,
well, but sort of there's a town in Belgium that I really want to go to that's been voted several times the most crappy place in certainly in Europe. But of that, of course, I find immensely interesting and want to go and see it for myself.
There is something about that, like places that are run down. Well, if you take Sydney as an example, like Paddington or Balmain or, you know, Newtown, these places that were the sort of slum areas that, what you know, it attracts artists, it attracts people, I don't know, different-minded. Is that what it is? Is it that kind of run down?
Yeah, sometimes it's run down or it's a place that was once kind of, say, a big coal industry and then that's all closed down. And now it's kind of a rust belt. I mean, some like American rust belt towns, but also other places. I mean, there are places like that in all over the world, places that once existed because there was a certain industry there or a certain activity. And then when that closed down or moved off, the place went into a sort of decline. That doesn't necessarily mean it's always inevitably a crap place either. Sort of, you know, there is some kind of new built suburbs, which would be my idea of a crap place. It's a subjective thing. My crap place might be someone else's wonderful place to live, and my wonderful place to live might be someone else's idea of what's a crap place. So it's very subjective.
True. So what are you working on now, and how do you sustain a writing career? Do you have to do, you know, you're doing playwriting, you're doing poetry, you're an author, you've written for radio. Is it about adapting your skill?
It is, but also being interested in those areas. I mean, I don't write for film or TV because they're not areas that interest me. I write for areas that interest me and informs that interest me. I'm actually working on a companion piece for Good With Maps, which I've been working on with the same team, called The End of Winter, which is about being a lover of cold weather and the places I went looking for cold weather and places I chose not to go, and also about, as a result of climate change, are we in danger of losing winter altogether, and what will we lose if winter only exists in fairy tales and in the art and literature of the past?
It's another type of possible vacancy. Did you go to Antarctica? I have to ask.
No, I deliberately decided not to.
Is one of those all places you didn't go? Yeah.
It is. And there's quite a lot about Antarctica in the piece, but it's also about deciding where you go and where you don't go, and about carbon footprints and choices, and also making some less conventional choices about where I went in search of coal.
So where did you go?
I went to a workshop on the culture and politics of icebergs at a university. In Search of Coal. So it's kind of different things.
Wow. The culture and politics. What are the politics of icebergs? You're meaning about climate change?
Mostly a bit into it with climate change, but also the kind of, it looked at what does polar science look like? And, you know, it looked, tends to look very male, youngish, techie. So some of that stuff about the cold, I was also kind of interested in finding women who had gone to polar regions early and putting them into the picture, because it's a very male, heroic sort of Captain Scott kind of Douglas Mawson sort of narrative. So I wanted to question that, those sort of heroic narratives a bit, and put some other people back in there.
So can you tell me someone that you've, who, a woman, a female voice?
The piece is still in development, so I'm going to let that play out. I mean, there were anthropologists, there was Russian scientists, and I think it's also important to remember that not in Antarctica, but in the Arctic regions, there were Inuit, Sami, native Siberians, male and female, that occupied those latitudes for centuries. And so had were living in a cold environment. But for a long time, the first woman didn't set foot on the Antarctic until sort of the middle of the last century.
Right. So coming back to Good With Maps now, after this time, I imagine it makes you think of your dad, and how does it look now from this perspective, like five or so years later?
Well, my father died, but, you know, quite a number of years ago now. Mm-hmm. So sometimes, in some ways, it's nice to be reminded of some of the things about his life, but, it's, you know, there's a sadness there too. I got on much better with him than I did with my mother. But, you know, I moved to the other side of the world quite a long time. That, and that's true for many people in Australia who have families in other parts of the world. So yes, I'm sort of more distant from it now. So it's kind of I'm less affected by it, because there's, you know, there is that distance. There's time now. I think the piece first went on in 2016, so that's sort of 5 years ago, and he had already died by that time anyway. Because it's now sort of performed by somebody else, and it's gone. And one of the things that's been really fantastic about it is that it has had so many seasons and. With the same team, because I think in Australia we don't get enough repeat seasons or second productions. We tend to get too many hit and run seasons. And there's something about doing something that you've done a number of times in different contexts that allows all sorts of subtleties and nuances and themes to kind of emerge. And that's a sort of wonderful part of it, is that it has been on so many times.
Yeah.
The script is published by Currency Press. So yes, it's kind of, it's a very different experience for me now than it was 5 years ago.
Indeed. Well, last question. Where is your first trip then, once everything opens up? Is it Brazil? No, not Brazil, Belgium, sorry. The crap town in Belgium.
No, I don't know. I think it'll depend what becomes available.
Yeah.
I think, you know, like everyone else, we're probably thinking, how soon can I get to New Zealand? Exactly. Will we get a bubble with part Pacific Islands or Singapore? Indeed. I mean, probably one of the sort of first trips I make, I will go to Britain and Europe. Though I've recently had a kind of great craving to go to New Orleans, and it's the first time I've actually had a desire to go to America for a long time. I mean, the whole time Trump was there and all those people, far too many people running around with guns. But for some reason, that's kind of come into my mind. But yes, I'd like to think that that town in Belgium would be one of the places we can go to. But it all seems a bit unreal at the moment, doesn't it?
Does indeed, indeed. Well, in the meantime, we can journey with you to the Amazon via Good With Maps. Noelle, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you very much, Regina.
Well, that was Noelle Janicheska, and her play Good With Maps will be on at the Riverside on the 30th of April and 1st of May, performed by the wonderful Jane Fegan as the central character, and it's produced by Siren Theatre Company, which is Kate Gall's production company.
Some of the nation's most accomplished actors come together to perform electrifying poems at a very special Sydney Writers Festival Poetry Gala at Sydney Town Hall on Saturday, May 1st. Featuring Brian Brown, Ewan Leslie, Tim Minchin, Pamela Rabe, Toby Schmitz, Yale Stone, Mia Wasikowska, Megan Wilding and more. Sydney Writers Festival, April 26 to May 2. Program out now at swf.org.au. Sydney Writers Festival sponsors 2SER 107.3.
Well, this is Stages and 2SER 107.3, and this month we're asking you to support your local independent community radio station. If it's been a few years since you've been part of our community, why not join again? Our passionate listeners will be happy to know that we still have some limited edition T-shirts available, so just head to 2SER.com and subscribe. You'll keep us on air. You'll also go in the draw for one of two Audio-Technica turntables. Here's some New Orleans-y style music, The Iguanas with Fortune Teller.
I went to a fortune teller to have my fortune read. I didn't know what to tell her. I had a dizzy feeling in my head. Then she took a look at my palm. She said, son, you feel kind of warm. She looked into a crystal ball. She said, you're in love. I said, how can that be so? I'm not tight with none of the chicks I know. She said, before the next sunrise, you'll be looking into her eyes. And I said, told for free.
You were here with us as a 2SER subscriber this April. Subscribe before April 30 at 2SER.com for your chance to win one of two Audio-Technica turntables and a stack of 2SER-friendly vinyl releases. All subscribers, new, current or renewing, will go into the draw. All subscribers also receive our 2020 Listening Post magazine, subscriber card and bumper sticker. Feeling generous? New passionate subscribers also receive a free T-shirt. Subscribe now at 2SER.com.
Well, that's it from me. A big thanks to my guest this evening, Noelle Janicheska. And if you haven't done it already, please get online to 2SER.com and become a subscriber and help keep us on air. I'll see you next week.